Yep, here we are. And we're going to keep things civil tonight. that was purely a joke. I don't know if
was,
I don't even know if that's
listening in on my the other podcast I had to do last night. This going to get ugly.
Well, no, I didn't. Did you talk about this already?
It's on the can. It's in the can. It'll come out in a week or two, so you get dibs first on your airwaves will hear my rants before somebody else will. So, yeah.
So is this for the Cinephile Hissy Fit podcast?
Yeah, we
Don Shanahan of Film Obsessive and Every Movie Has a Lesson.
Thank you for the introduction. And yes, it is. Will Johnson called down the thunder for a Civil War last night where he wanted Katie Glidewell and Jeff York, poached a few more Chicagoans to discuss this movie tonight. So that will be in your ears in a week or two. So
awesome. Well, Mark, the movie man Krawcheck, aka Press, tonight. Yeah. How are you doing, sir?
Let me see if it works. Oh, no, didn't work. Sorry. Okay. Dang it.
Mark's been pressed enough already this week. Leave him alone.
Right.
We're doing all right. Glad to be here. I didn't do my movie man's movie minute yet because I got home. I had to get to bed because I got up at 3 a.m. 2:30 this morning for my server updates. But it's also I didn't record it right away because I had to digest it. And I'm still digesting it.
Okay.
So I've got most of my thoughts. So this is going to be the first thoughts. My thoughts will be the first here on your show, public thoughts here on this movie as well. So,
well, I also, because I could imagine it would probably take you like 6 hours to write a minute long synopsis of this movie, because that's got to be quite a feat.
That's why I usually cut out the synopsis and just go to my opinion and leave people But even so, I was also trying to figure out there's a lot to unpack here.
This was a 1,200-1,300 word review for me, and that's a lot. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I hit 1,000 pretty average, but once you tip in, once you're hitting the 12s, it's a thesis more than a movie review at that point. So
about two times more than mine.
Two times more than most people I know. So yeah, knowing Ian though, Ian every now and then can uncork like a 2,400.
Oh yeah, it's like a flood. He's got like it backed up. Well, that's like backed up, and then he has some critic fiber, and then it just unloads.
Movie Metamucil. Yeah, it's beautiful. Right. Yeah,
There you go. I think it's because I only write like two or three times a year at this point.
But when you do, I love it because you lay into it, man. You always pick a diatribe of a movie. You're not doing 2,200 words on Trolls 4. You're doing 2,200 words on the polarizing movie of the year, and I love it.
Well, thank you. I'm not doing 2,200 words on this movie, although it is probably one of the more polarizing films of 2024. But, you know, hey, that's what we have here. I'll probably speak more than 2,200 words, and I probably already have.
Tally chart out here. Four?
Oh, no. and bring out your bell, if anything, Don.
That's always nearby. Gotcha.
But okay, so Alex Garland's Civil War. Mm-hmm. It's the largest movie that the independent studio A24 has done to date. I didn't look up the box office tallies. I had heard that it was a very successful film. What do we have here, Don?
The budget on this is $50 million, which of course sounds like a drop in a bucket compared to big studios, but for A24, that's a lot. I think it chimed in $28 million this past weekend, or am I short? It was a 32. Over half of its budget back week one. Which is a good sign for that.
And that's a good sign going into the next week where you're going to have two genre films pop in.
Yeah, Ministry. You're going
to see. And given the demographic that I saw, the audience that I saw, they're not going to go to Abigail or the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. They'll go to this first.
Right. I'm assuming your demographic is, you're north of the Cheddar Curtain. My mother's north of the Cheddar Curtain, saw this movie. So
I was one of the younger folks in the audience. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
I would love to be a fly on the wall for the boomer reaction to this movie because that's not the three of us. But my mother was like, it was intense and it was bloody. I don't know if I liked it. I'm like, thanks. Mom.
I heard some grumbling.
Pay you the big bucks, Mom.
I heard some grumblings in the audience behind me of the older audience members torn because the movie for them was well done, but there were elements in it they just didn't like, and they were
that kind of sums up my feelings on it. It's one of those movies that I watched it, I experienced it, I really loved most of it, but yeah. I don't know if I'll watch it again. And part of that is because I'll probably never watch it on the big screen again. And there are certain movies that are just big screen experiences. You know, you can watch it at home if you've seen it before, but it's not quite the same. But yeah, let's just kind of go around and get like the overall reactions to kind of set the table here. I'm mixed positive on it, but Don, where are you at?
I'm mixed positive as well. I'm curious what your mix is and what your positives are compared to mine. We'll have fun chatting that up. But it is a very finely made film. Alex Garland can write some things and can press some scenes together, because even in transitional scenes that you think would be, I don't want to say fluff and asides and things like that, but he can make even the little stuff matter a little bit. Like even when you're tucking on a couch, drinking vodka with a battle nearby, you can squeeze some essence out of a movie or squeeze some character development. Even when you're watching the aftermath of a flagged suicide bomber, there's something there, not just the action scene that came before it. Just hearing journalists talk and obviously creating the characters that he did, and to put this movie through that lens takes a certain smartness and screenplay, takes a certain dedication to that slant. And I think everyone and their brother's already kind of seeing about this movie that the movie is as gray as its photography, where we're going very apolitical, and that is a choice and that is a challenge. It's a challenge that it's worth kind of tipping a hat to, whether or not that can work, whether or not you're maybe missing another level of oomph or another level of drama or another level of connection. I think that can be debated, that maybe that you left a little, as dramatic as this movie can be, maybe you leave a little bit on the table or leave a little bit on the scripted page floor because you went the choice and route that you chose to do, Alex, to do what you did. What saves this movie for me in a little bit in the mixed positive department is that last 30 minutes is as bracing of intense action as you can get, where the false advertising, I'm going to say it right now, the false advertising of this movie's very national iconography finally shows up when we're bombing Lincoln memorials and busting into the White House. And that is a breathless 30 minutes in the last half. Where that movie was in the posters, where we're doing that in New York, and we're doing that in Chicago, and we're doing that in Philly, some nice false advertising from A24 bought you in the door, and that's fine. But when the movie needed an edge, it has an edge. Is it missing the next, I guess I could use the word essence, or missing the next level of essence, affectation, a little bit of heart, a little bit of reason why, you know? I don't want to say the word reason too strongly because you don't have to have it, but at the same time, I don't want to use the Mark Rylance stuff that we would use in Will Johnson's presence of making fun of Bridge of Spies, but would it help? Is my answer. Unfortunately, I get to a point of like, yes, maybe a little more would help than the stance that was taken here. That's where I can
or lack thereof.
Correct.
Yeah. We will get into whether or not this is an apolitical movie in a bit, because you want to talk about false advertising. I think that was one of the big, no pun intended, red flags.
Now, I don't give a crap about that, but other people might. So
yeah. I kind of do, because I feel like, and yeah, we'll launch into the whole thing, but this movie I don't think is as apolitical as Alex Garland claims it is because of some of the choices that he makes.
Okay.
And I think that I don't know if he's lying or if he is so caught up in whatever he believes politically that he thinks that his worldview is an apolitical worldview. Certain things like, on this, right? No. Yeah.
Well, the tricky thing is he's an apolitical, he's an outside Brit coming in talking about American politics. That is in itself a tricky mouthpiece, lens, or challenge. So
it is. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But Mark, I want to, are you positive, negative, mixed to positive, mixed negative? Where are you?
I'm positive on it, but
positive. Okay.
I enjoyed the film quite a bit. One, because we're running this year, and I'll try not to ramble, but we're running this year what we ran into 2 years ago. There's a void because you're losing, you don't have really tentpole films. You don't really have superhero films. So there's a bit of, we need some films on screen, and A24 is like, we got some movies, just like they did a couple of years ago, and with Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'm not saying that this film is that, but I'm just saying that I'm watching this film and I am enjoying the fact that I am seeing something like this on the big screen, where somebody's at least taking a chance and taking some risk here. And no, it's not as apolitical as people believe, but at the same time, I think it's just exploring a situation of a what if.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Of sorts. It's but you don't get political parties necessarily named specifically right. in this. It is factions. And at first I was like, okay, what are we going to get here? And then I realized, at least from my perspective, the way I took this film, and I think I enjoyed it a lot more, in that if you look at its core, this is about press corps in war times. And if this is set in a different country in the exact same situation, mm-hmm. it's just that we're seeing a story like this done in North America on U.S. ground, which is something that Western theater audiences are not seeing. We're used to seeing press corps in Vietnam trenches. We're used to seeing press corps in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, Iraq. We're used to seeing them in the foreign countries risking their lives with soldiers, and in here it's on U.S. soil. If the situation was slightly different as far as venue and environment and where this takes place, this might not be as a firecracker of a film for some people, but the fact that it's in the U.S. and exploring some of these themes that we're used to seeing in foreign war pictures following press corps, because it's about the press corps.
Yeah, this is a journalism movie first and foremost.
This
and
is a good one
for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that bit. And once I kind of compartmentalized it into that and see where it's actually focused and the situations around it, I enjoyed it. I love Alex Garland's stuff. I've loved all the movies that he's directed. He's only directed four movies and a TV series. I haven't seen the TV series, but the four movies he's directed.
Wait, did you see Men?
Yeah,
I did not.
I loved Men. Okay. I thought Men was.
I thought you were challenged on.
I'm gonna click that one. I'm gonna clip that one out, Mark.
See, and this is where Ethan just drops me from the story. No, yeah. I liked Men again. I think part of the reason is I've watched a lot of indie films, probably more than most. So to see films that are taking a risk, even maybe if they're not exactly the best, like Oscar worthy, the fact that they're films that are a bit risky that you're seeing on the big screen, I welcome, because I like seeing that. I like being challenged too with a film as well. And it's not a, this is not a boring film. It is a film that moves. Yeah. It was nice to have a shorter runtime. I'm glad they didn't do this, 2 hour film? This is like an hour and four. This is like in that sweet spot of 104, 110 minute film, I think, which is a sweet spot for films. I mean, the 80s, we all grew up in it. That was the sweet spot. They were going for that 100 minute film. If you got about 100 minute, that was a really nice film, because you could get a lot of showings and you could tell a tight story. And the story here fairly well is tight. There's a little bit, but I just liked the situational things that happened. And overall, outside of the ending, though, I will say the ending, I understand why they did it.
Yeah.
Me, on a personal level, I wanted it to end differently. But again, I'm not faulting it. It didn't take away from me. That movie sucked because of the ending. Just because the ending I didn't get is the one. It's still a solid ending, and it brings a message with the ending, but it's just not the one I was hoping for.
I want to hear what that is when Ian's done with his little piece here.
But that's where I'm at. I enjoyed it. Maybe a lot of it is because I'm watching this film going, okay, this is something different. There's a lot of really cool creative stuff going on, and seeing it on the big screen, you can tell it's kind of shot in some of these scenes for the big screen. Mm-hmm. And overall, I appreciated it just out of the gate for something different. And what we've been getting a lot at the theater. So.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has a different journal. The journalism angle is fascinating, and something that actually made me consider was this kind of gets to what you were talking about, Mark, about, you know, movies kind of like this set in other countries, but also just the journalism, the photojournalism specifically that we've grown up with, you know, in our, you know, 40 some plus years, seeing war photography from war zones, but only seeing the photos. In this movie, I mean, it's a fictitious setting, but you get to see how someone would go about getting photos of, say, the famous picture, maybe one of the most famous pictures from Vietnam, in addition to the young girl who was on fire with the napalm, was the one person getting their head, you know, their brains blown out, right? I've seen that picture. It's horrifying. But until watching Civil War, I never thought, oh, there's someone with a camera standing like a foot away capturing this moment. We get a lot of that in this movie because, okay, what is Civil War? It is a movie in which we were dropped right into the middle of a possibly years-long, you know, national conflagration. Kirsten Dunst plays a world-weary, famous photojournalist who kind of made her bones at the beginning of whatever this situation was. And she is, her name is, oh, come on. Where is it?
Lee.
Lee. That's right. Yeah. And Jessie is Kaylee Spaney's character. And she's like a 20 something aspiring photojournalist, aspiring war photographer. She wants to be in the mix and covering all this stuff. They meet up. She ends up, Jessie goes on this reluctant road trip from New York to Washington, D.C. But because the country is so messed up and there's fighting everywhere, they have to take this crazy circuitous route that takes them, you know, through places they shouldn't have to go in a normal situation. It takes them several days to get to D.C. because the president of the United States is rumored that he is going to. Well, it starts off, Nick Offerman is the president, and the film opens with him doing kind of a test right before he gives a press conference, demanding the surrender of the Western forces, which is primarily Texas and California, allied against, you know, D.C. and their forces who are, I guess, all over the country. But it turns out that the tables might be quickly turned, and towards the end of the movie, spoiler alert, Washington falls. Turns out the president is not as strong or his allies as they thought they were, yada, yada, yada. So you've got these four, we've got two journalists and two photogs. You've got Joel, who's played by Wagner Moura. And you've got, oh my gosh, who's the
Stephen Henderson, right?
Stephen McKinley Henderson, plays Sammy. He's the elder statesman of the group. And they're going on this journey. It's very episodic in that they encounter, you know, different camps, different factions of people, different kind of wartime atrocities, and they just shoot it. You know, they talk to the people, they get their stories, they photograph them. There's a lot of what I graciously call cheating going on in the movie, and to talk about that, I'm going to put on the spoiler banner.
But you gave away the end of the movie already.
Not really, because I didn't see what happens to the president. But now I can, because we're talking spoilers. But plus, like in the trailers, you see like everything in Washington essentially getting
getting shot.
That's the money shot stuff for a trailer. Yeah, I get it. Yeah,
right. Money trailer shot.
So when I talk about cheating, the group comes across a gas station, and when they go to this gas station to fuel up, Jessie, the young reporter, goes off on her own. Always a big mistake. It's such a horror movie trope. And this one, you know, redneck guy with this giant gun follows her. And then Lee notices that she's gone off, so she follows both of them. It turns out they go to a car wash that's attached to the gas station, and strung up are a couple of thieves that they'd caught, and they've been tortured and beaten. And the guy's like, why don't you decide which one I should kill? And Lee, acting quickly, says, hey, can you go pose with these two guys? And so they start taking pictures. Cut to, they're driving away and everything's fine in the car. I'm like, wait, no. You're ratcheting up a really tense situation, and then you cut to a few minutes later and they're just zooming along. No, that's not how that situation resolves itself without something really weird happening. Later in the famous, I'm jumping all over here, but I'm just trying to lay the table. The famous scene from all the advertising with Jesse Plemons wearing the bright red sunglasses, asking our group of travelers who have picked up a couple of Asian correspondents with them, He says, you know, what kind of an American are you? Mm-hmm. He has all these folks dead to rights because he's got a couple other soldiers who are packing serious heat. They're standing over a literal pit full of bodies that they've been, mm-hmm. I guess, covering with lye. Like, how is this going to resolve itself? Well, don't worry about it, because Sammy's going to drive in with the truck and run everybody over. And there's not even going to be like someone who's kind of left alive to, I mean, there's one person who shoots at them after they've already scrambled to the truck and are like half a mile down the road. But it's like, again, it's kind of cheating.
Yeah. You can say the same thing about that town shopping scene. Like, you have that lovely, there's like this little idyllic town that seems to be unaffected by the things around it. Yet you realize soon after, look at the roofs, and then like you just happily drive away from that. You have the sniper in the Christmas village thing. Obviously it's tense for a few minutes, but then you kind of just drive away from that. You do that a lot.
Well,
in this movie,
the Christmas village scene, because there's a house, a really large house.
Gorgeous.
And that I thought was kind of a nice detail, because I've been to, they have like those elaborate petting zoos and farms and stuff like all over the place. And there's always like the family that owns it is doing really well for themselves. So they have these like nice palatial estates. I mean, they're beautiful houses. Mm. But what I kept thinking was, there was this faction of soldiers who were shooting at the person in the house who was shooting at anything coming up the road. So it was a really tense scene. They, spoiler alert, banner folks, they got the guy or girl or whoever's the sniper, but then it's just one sniper.
Yes.
You know, it's not like, well, how did they know it was safe to keep driving?
You know? Right. You know, or just, again, you hear the shot, you hear that we got him, and
then they're driving
later.
Away.
Yeah.
The idyllic town, I think, works because I could understand them. They were creeped out when they got there, because people are just like walking along the street, you know, walking their dog. There's the boutique shop girl who's like reading a book. She doesn't get any business, but she doesn't care.
Right.
And you're like, what's happening to this town? It's a very simple shot of people on the roof with guns. I could see not wanting to press their luck. Right.
True.
And just getting the hell out of there. And we understand as an audience how they are allowed to sit there and survive. I thought that was probably the strongest metaphor that the movie had to offer, besides the whole like Civil War divide or whatever.
Right.
That's this sort of a perfect encapsulation of what I'll call America, but I'll just say it's more like the comfy West. The entire world in real life is on fire.
Except
relatively America, we've got our own strife and everything, but we don't have bombs going off everywhere and you know, shootings. Well,
that's one of those empty question marks of the movie is, and we get little hints like sometimes in that before that Jesse Plemons moment of like revealing where you're from and stuff like, oh, Colorado, oh, Missouri. Earlier, we already learned that one's from Colorado, one's from Missouri, and that what's the Midwest up to? Well, they're just sitting in their homes and, you know, pretending like this doesn't exist. And it's not the school teacher in me, it's not the socialist teacher in me, but it's in the, if we're going fiction and we're pressing these buttons to be, even if we're trying to press apolitical buttons, or at least the guise of apolitical buttons, there's preposterousness that I can't believe where, don't get me wrong, we are in, and I don't, and the other thing that a zillion critics and people are doing is projecting the now into this movie. I don't do that. I don't give a shit. But no, it's this idea that if you're going to take this premise to the extent that you're going to, I just find it rationally impossible. If you've got California and if you've got the cowboys and the surfers together, that there's no way that half the country or a third of the country would sit this out. Because like if Washington is in shambles and all the things that are going on and let's just say it in terms of Chicago politics on our own that we can talk about, once the federal teat is running dry, chaos is everywhere else. Like we're not going to public school in Chicago if there's a war in Washington. Like we might have our malaise to things. We might have those people who really do want to stay out of it, but there's no way this isn't crisis times 12. Pennsylvania, you know, it's worse than this.
I'll defend that part of it in the fact of they mentioned two states that have very low populations in general. Yeah. Her one parent's in Oregon, and I forgot where the other one is or whatnot. Where historically, you know, I think what he may have been trying to go for with it, and I understand what you're saying about the Midwest staying out of it, but them saying that their parents are acting like it's not happening doesn't mean other people in their regions are acting like it's happening. They're talking about their parents acting like it's not happening, which a number of individuals I could see, especially from the states that they were talking about, who are far enough away from
there's
the
enough
action.
Boomers that would sit this out. I get
but
that. But
there might now, we don't know what's part of those other areas because we're focused on our journalist path through. And I didn't mind that because it let me fill it in. And I think there's nothing to say that the Midwest hasn't divided itself or there's a wall or there's a defense as well saying, okay, you guys are going to keep going to Washington. You go right ahead. Don't you stop here.
That's a great point, Mark. And that's immediately what I jumped to is perhaps there is a section of the country, much like that small town that is allowed to sit it out because they've got, you know, fortifications.
They're in cahoots now, as far as the good president. Yeah.
Well, they're not in cahoots with anybody. They're just not taking a side. They're just protecting their own village.
And I can't see, I'm not trying to make this preposterousness versus non-preposterous or fantasy versus reality, but like, I just can't see that working. Like, and I know those little hints are here. Like Lee got her start with like an Antifa thing, and that I can believe. And then like all of a sudden at the gas station scene, there's like Canadian money, like, ooh, Canadian money. Like Canada's now doing us. And if the other thing I'm thinking of is like, if the United States was in this level of crisis, the rest of the world is fucked too, because we do so much for everybody else. So like, this would not be just Washington Hicks versus California Hicks. You know, it would be worse than this.
Well, yeah, I mean, a couple of things there, Don, that I'm glad you brought up. One, as far as the international perspective, we do get a couple of what you might call BBC reporters who kind of show up towards the end of the movie.
Right.
But there is no greater context for, and I know that's not what this movie is about.
Right. I'm trying to put my brakes on that. Yeah.
Right. No, but that's sort of the problem.
I agree.
You can't really tell a story like this without taking into account all the implications, unless you're going to say this is a movie with which you have to have half a dozen qualifiers before you can like drop into it. Because you're right, if America goes to hell, not only is is our presence internationally in jeopardy, but also we leave ourselves open to invasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, China would F us up.
That be interesting if in the middle of this civil war there was an invasion and
Red
Dawn
the ending? That'd be awesome.
I mean, honestly, what if the factions had to come together and that's how you resolve the civil war? But it's the big joke, right?
Right?
Left and the right would come together the moment there's an aliens dropped onto the planet, you know, or something like that, Independence Day situation. The other point I completely forgot.
I'll back you where it's like, and Mark is right. You don't creating that in your mind is a great worthy challenge. And I welcomed it and enjoyed it in this movie. And I'm not saying you have to overcorrect that to spoon feed everything. I don't need, you know, 2 pages of on screen, you know, a prologue type America 2044. This has happened. And you're like, I don't need the Terminator intro music here, you know, but I think if you could color or shade a few things here, a few things there in all this gray, point a few fingers here, point a few fingers there, label one or two things, just enough things. You don't got to tell us everything, but you got to get a little more. Well, if you have a few more things colored and a few more things labeled, there's some poignancy to be had there. And there's a little more heavier commentary to be had there. And then there's a little bit more audience investment there, or at least the audience triggering there that can cause investment rather than the malaise. Because apathy wins in this movie. Apathy wins and a half. Like, when Kirsten Dunst is shot and her little buddy who idolizes her just keeps going, apathy wins just to get the shot. Come on. It's a hell of a stance to take and a bold one. But at the same time, that could have meant the world in a different ending in a different place.
But that was kind of the message that they were going for. If you look at Kirsten Dunst's character, I loved Kirsten Dunst. This is one of her.
Fantastic.
I'm like, wow, because she is literally the definition of the hardened war journalist. She's seen some crap and she's compartmentalized all of that just so that she could get the shot, and she keeps her wits about her until she loses the one voice of reason, which is, you know, the veteran journalist who she's friends with, who she, you know, would have debates with, but who basically mentored her.
Yeah.
You know, that's when she kind of loses her focus, is when he, when what happens to him happens to him, you know. But up until that point,
he gets cheesy movie death too. Like, oh
yeah, I know. But
I didn't mind it. I was happy because it works, you know.
I was happy too because it showed that they didn't get completely away scot-free from that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was like, somebody's good. He didn't hit the gas tank, so somebody's gonna get shot. Which one? Mm. And I figured, okay, it's gonna be him.
Yeah.
You know, but that was the whole thing of she keeps drilling into this very young, impressionable woman's head that regardless of what happens, you need to, you know, the importance is to get the shot, you know, and yeah. We see how she, you know, and I love Kaylee Spaney as Jesse too.
Yeah.
She's like a younger version of Lee, you know, mm-hmm. And we see how she transforms a bit and she becomes a little bit of Joel and a little bit of Lee.
Yeah.
She starts finding the thrill in the war that Joel has because he's an adrenaline junkie up the like severe adrenaline junkie, which we find out. So she's got that angle. She's kind of learning that from him and she's learning the hardcore journalism for Lee. So those two hanging out with those two together and what she learned, I get the ending. I didn't necessarily like that they actually offed Dunst because I think it's because I really enjoyed her character.
Yeah.
At the same time, I understand what he was going for. I was hoping for maybe a little different angle with that.
Well, you were saying, but you were hoping for a different ending or had your expectations. Flesh that out. What were you thinking here?
Well, yeah. I was hoping that it was going to be one of those to where if she was shot because she was wearing the Kevlar that she didn't actually die. You have
a red herring a little bit there.
Yeah. You have Jesse. You have Jesse getting the final shot, being the hardcore journalist and literally taking a shot as she's falling. And then you have Kirsten Dunst falling and her thinking Lee is dead. And then maybe Lee getting up, you know, barely or whatnot and looking at her, giving her the look, you know, giving her a look like really like,
I know,
you know, yeah. You know, just a little hair turn to where she could be injured but not necessarily killed because she did have the vest on. But at the same time, I understand why they did it, and it was set up at the very beginning when they said that press gets killed in DC regardless.
Yeah.
So even though she had press written on her back, those guys could have stopped for a second, but they shot her anyway. You know, even though it is a fury of a gunfight, they saw a press on the back of her, you know, and so I understand the direction they took. I did not want her necessarily to be killed. I wanted maybe a little bit more to where she's decided to hang up her hat, but Jesse is all for it. And she's just like, what have I done to this young woman? You know, that
like
kind
if she set this out in the truck, because you see her before the White House breach rattled. And it's the most we've ever seen Lee rattled all movie where I was wondering if there was a part where she sits this one out in the truck, you know, and
they needed some extra space between Sammy's death and that Washington assault, because when she starts to come apart, I felt like there was something missing. Like, no, she doesn't just
another one of those scenes
start
where
crying and screaming, like, and
she's cleaning blood off the truck, and that's as much as we get.
Right, and then the next scene is the assault on Washington, and she's completely lost everything. Yeah. I mean, we even saw with Joel earlier on when his friends had. Although I gotta say, it's not funny, but it did recall when he's by the side of the road screaming his lungs out because his friends had died. I think that was so many people die in this movie. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah.
We see the tanks and the trucks like rolling behind him. I immediately flash back to the very end of The Mist with Thomas Jane.
Yes.
The monsters are all dispersed.
Yeah.
I feel like he could cut do a comical side swipe over to the left or something, like, oh, there's Thomas Jane also screaming.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
The ending of this movie.
Let's start with
Alex Garland not being as apolitical as he.
I was wondering about that. If that builds to what you think with the ending, let's hear it. Yeah. Where do you see the labels? Where do you see the coloration? I know I use those words, but you use yours. I'm sorry.
No, coloration is a great place to start. They should have had a Hispanic or a female or an Asian president of the United States, not Nick Offerman, immediately calling to mind Donald Trump.
True.
To the point where when he's doing his test parent thing in the beginning and then he starts speaking, the yes, elderly, like you guys, I was the youngest person in my audience. One lady like leaned over to her husband and said, "Is that Trump?" I'm like,
yeah. I love Offerman as a deadpan deliverer of sternness with the coif of hair. Like he can look the part in a weird way, ominous, but the Trump vibe
right.
is totally
but,
there.
Yeah. Right. Because and what does he say? Or no, I think it's the other character.
The overclaiming
talking about
of victory,
him.
Right. Yeah, because he's there going cognitive dissonance, like we're winning and they're gonna surrender when Washington is gonna fall the next weekend, you know.
Well, but I mean, you could, if you want to take this into the real world, Biden said the same stuff, the whole like you're condemning MAGA Republicans and all this stuff. Both presidents have labeled the other side or factions of the other side enemies of the people.
That's true.
So that in that sense, it is apolitical. But if you look at the nuances of Mark, you said Lee should not have been shot in that hallway because people clearly saw that she was marked with press. The people shooting at that faction were the president's Secret Service detail.
True.
And if you want to take it into the real world, who is the enemy of the people? Famously, Donald Trump has said the press.
Yeah.
But
that's
in talking about the Offerman president, who I think is just referred to as the president.
Yeah.
They say things like, this is his third term. What was everyone saying at the end of 2020? Donald Trump is never going to surrender. He's going to stay in office and be a dictator. Mm-hmm. They were talking about, there was another item on that. There was droning people, like drone bombing people on his own soil, which, you know, he hasn't officially done. I mean, Obama killed Americans overseas, but that was a different story. Yeah. There was a second thing that
is it the Florida Alliance stuff, like the failed Florida attempt? Is that a piece to it?
It was something else. I don't remember. But the whole, and at the very end, when they, and spoilers here, folks, again, seriously, if you haven't seen this movie, turn off and come back later. They make their way into the Oval Office. The president kind of comes, like, is dragged out from the desk like a sniveling little coward, which is what I imagine more than half the country really. It's like they're getting hard over this fantasy situation, and the soldiers are about to execute him, and Joel leans in and says, you know, wait, I want to get a quote. And the random president, because we're not taking sides, says, I don't want to die, please don't kill me. And he says, that'll do it. And then they fucking execute him, and the last image of this movie is it flashes to white, and then over the course of three grueling minutes, we see this Polaroid picture develop with smiling soldiers standing over the corpse of the president.
Like they shot a big deer. Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. If Alex Garland somehow thinks in his wild fantasies that he's not taking a stand and this is an apolitical movie, the guy needs serious help. Now, I love him as a filmmaker, and I love this film from a filmic standpoint, and I think the drama is wonderful. But what this movie needed to be, because I think you just leave the politics out of it. And a way to do that is to essentially adapt the politics of Children of Men. That is the movie that this movie should have been.
Great.
A road trip through a destroyed country. You don't know exactly what happened. And the deal with that movie, if no one's seen it, shame on you. First of all, it's a brilliant film. The world has stopped. The world is no longer able to produce children. So at the beginning of this film, the oldest living person on the planet, or the youngest person, I guess, last born, dies. And so there's no more hope for the future. But there is a miracle birth, so to speak. And there's this guy is trusted to get this pregnant lady through dangerous territory so these scientists can help figure out, you know, hope for humanity. And that is a true, like, war-torn, bloody, tragic tale.
Danger around this, every corner place. Yeah,
right.
That's a hell of a
this movie. This feels like the PG-13 version of that, just in terms, not in terms of like the graphics of the viscera, but just in terms of like the idea, right?
Or I agree.
The execution of it. Yeah. So that's my long rant. So please take me apart.
No, I echo that earlier where I'm like, if this was what it was supposed, if the premise is what the premise is and it's said to be, this should be a whole lot worse, in a bigger, denser, because this is between New York and Washington. This should be a maelstrom of things, not couple of country roads, trouble here, trouble there. A few moments later, and I'm seeing the clues you're dropping about just the takes that they're making, the comparisons, illusions that are possible. And yet I will say at the same time, I won't take the ultra political person's way out of like projecting my own stuff in this movie. I refuse to call this movie prophetic. I refuse to call this movie cognizant and aware of our times, the movie we need right now. I'm not going for that clickbait stuff. I take this to be the realistic fiction thriller that it tends to be, and the gap there between this and something like Children of Men is that this is a political conundrum or pickle, whereas Children of Men is something larger. It's biological. It's a human race and civilization level problem, which is always going to be worse. And is in half science fiction in the bag there a little bit, where you can, it's more daring and you can do a few more things, and where this movie, as you said, maybe pulls a few two more punches than does it, because that's kind of where I'm at. Like, if you just put a little more mustard on it, the heft of loss and the heft of defeat, or the heft of steps you take to get closer to the goal, become a little more weighty if there's more behind it than the guise and veil of apoliticism.
Right. I think that's why I had said at the start of my rambling that this should have been a Hispanic or a female president, just someone like this is America, but as an alternate reality. I think there's too much in here, and especially because it's coming out during election year, which is also not feeling apolitical, it's weird because I might be reading too much into this, but I see things like what's one of the most iconic images of this movie? It is Jesse Plemons looking as pale as Jim Gaffigan, wearing giant, bright red aviator glasses. And he's the guy saying, "What kind of an American are you?" And at one point, the one guy goes, he says, "Where are you from?" And he said, "I'm from Hong Kong." He says, "China," and then he blows his, he just executes him. So I'm watching this and I'm like, I'm really into this movie, and then these little bursts of politics, like, we're not playing politics.
Not exactly. We know there are people like that out there, and there would people take advantage of it. If you notice with Jesse Plemons' character, he doesn't wear a flag on his vest. He is not part of the actual military. He's posing as a military soldier so he can carry out whatever personal agenda he and his cronies are doing.
Right. And
we know there are people like that out there. Yes. I know that because where I live, there are people who would do such a thing.
Right. Well, maintained militia is alive and real. They're just quiet.
Here is the thing, though. Mm-hmm. Not everybody who would take that position or do that thing is white. We're also looking at West Virginia. This takes place in West Virginia. Everything is coded. Now, again, I think this might require an American screenwriter who has a wider swath of politics and understanding, because I hate to say it, but if you look at all of the antagonists in this movie, they're all white guys. They're all white chicks. They are, with the exception of the black press secretary who was introduced in literally the last 5 minutes of the movie. And what do you have on the side of the people that we are following, the journalists? Oh, they're showing up these refugee camps where it's like a bowl of Skittles. It is white, black, Hispanic, Asian. It's much more mixed. Yeah. So again, I'm watching this movie and I understand the people who made it are saying it's apolitical. But when I'm watching it, I am seeing propaganda that is not effective, and it's also not working on me. And so when I'm looking at something like Children of Men, which is, it came out 16 years ago or something like that. And it was much more diverse, much more complicated in terms of its politics or lack of politics and its scale of story, that I'm like, this feels like a very easy movie to me. And I wish I could have just locked in and enjoyed it. But I think if they'd taken all elements of politics out of it somehow, then I would have enjoyed it more.
That's a hard thing to do, because I'm sitting over here going, no, label some politics, because then it is less, then it's more, I don't want to say clear, but then it's more impactful if you do just assign, like, just, don't beat around the bush. Just say it,
I agree. I might not want to watch that movie either or agree with it, but at least I'll know where the filmmaker is coming from.
Right. I won't feel like this removal. Like, entire removal is tricky because then you might as well be, then you can't call it America. Then this has to take place in Narnia or Middle Earth, you know, like it's, you're to do I'd it would that. Require, but no, seriously, to do, to remove politics like that would require fantasy. And that defeats kind of the purpose of the, you know, the kishiness of like, ooh, we're going to do this in America. We're going to put the Statue of Liberty with sandbags on it and snipers on it. Like, by the way, what are they going to shoot from there? The Staten Island Ferry? Like the
sniper image. Sniper rifle, powerful sniper rifle.
Yeah, but I mean, that, but you're also
it's,
in a,
it's a, really it's a beautiful image though. Yeah,
it is. I mean, it's a, that's the thing. It's you've got striking. And that maybe I am pissing and moaning about the marketing, but like you do have striking iconography painted on this film where you could do some big, you know, visual symbolic stuff. And then you don't, which is just, I like I said, I think they left some drama on the table.
Yeah. I'm
still positive. It's just, yeah.
No, yeah. And that's the thing is that's what's holding me back from loving this movie, because like the mechanics of it, I will say the one other thing that I would have liked to have seen is four of these journalists who are coming. There are four journos in a car.
Yeah.
And this doesn't help the perception that all journalists are, you know, we'll say liberals or at least leaning to one side.
Right.
There should have been some disagreement, some squabbling without even getting political in the real world sense. But, you know, maybe there's a person in there who supports what's going on in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, the scene where it's very effective, they're pulled over at the side of the road. They're kind of stopping for the night at night. And you see all these, there's a firefight going on like a couple miles away. Mm-hmm. You see all of like the red bullets and tracers and stuff going through the night. And Joel wants to go over there and Lee's like, you're crazy. It's nighttime. Yeah. We don't know what's going on. If it's still happening in the morning, we'll check it out. And of course it's still happening in the morning, and they go in and it's a small scale melee of people like pinned in versus, you know, folks with heavy artillery. Actually, it's kind of on both sides, mm-hmm. but the faction that the journos hook up with take out these people in military fatigues, whatever they're
in hula shirts. Working for, yeah.
Right. If they're working for the government or if they're just, you know, militia or what, you know, whatever, just weekend warriors, whatever happens at the end, they capture the soldiers and they take them out back and they execute like four people. Now, Joel is standing there talking to one of the guys they met up with. They're like laughing and having a beer while this is going on behind them. But at the very least, there should have been someone to say, hey, we can't just execute these people, or who are they? What's going on? We're journalists. Shouldn't we be trying to get the story before they blow their heads off? I mean,
yeah.
And what was Jesse doing? She wasn't like sitting there screaming in horror saying, no, no. Or I can't believe you're doing this. You people are monsters. How could you just sit there and let them execute them? And like, well, if there was just too much for as much realism as they were going for in certain parts of the movie, I think were effective. There are other parts where I'm like, it's kind of like the cut to driving away scene. Like, wait a second. No, I have questions. Earlier,
you know, like apathy wins too much in this. And apathy, if that's your route and that's your intent, you did it for sure.
I can understand, but if this to be an apathetic character, that cannot be an apathetic film. This cannot have Jesse in it. It has to be just Lee, Sammy, and just Joel going to Washington. Right. And in that case, it's a boring movie because they're all like, well, I like Kirsten Dunst also, but there was too many parts in the film where I'm like, okay, she's doing the stoic cut off cold thing.
Yeah.
And there wasn't as much nuance. I think Kaylee Spaney has much more of an arc,
more nuance. And even
and I'm very excited to see Alien. I'm very excited to see Alien Romulus.
That's right. Yeah,
it's weird because like of the four, Kirsten Dunst was kind of my least favorite. I think she did really well, but just in terms of her character, I think what you're saying, Don, like others got more to shine, I think. Yeah.
You, the last you saw likely of Wagner Moura is the voice of the big bad wolf in Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. And he's that's a menacing character. True. Yeah.
And that's a great movie. I mean, why aren't people talking about that movie more? Was that Puss in Boots 3 or 4?
Oh, I got one more iconography thing for you, which I laugh at, where maybe this can help you with your Trumpism stuff. I just sent it to you in the chat. So Will Johnson sent this to me today, and I can try to put it on the screen. It's an image of like the poster image of Chicago. Chicago's mm-hmm. version of the Civil War thing, and they are blowing up or showing the attacks on the corn cob condos. But I know my Chicago geography and the Photoshop going on here. This is exactly where the Trump Tower is at the bend in the Wabash, where I'm like, okay, you know, if you really want to say something, blow up that building that actually is there and not substituting the parking garage bottom of the Steve McQueen jump shot from the Hunter. Like, you can, you want to go harder, go harder. Or I see through your bullshit, A24. You really want to blow up the Trump Tower, and I kind of don't blame you, but at the same time, that's me, you know. But so they're dangling it without really committing. But we're letting,
yeah,
we're bringing out Mark here. Mark, where do you feel on this here?
I just let you guys go. I guess I've just look at the film differently. You know, I get you all make very valid points, but the one thing that I put into, and I know it hasn't, but there have been other stories about dictators or people trying to break or bend the Constitution in the U.S. Mostly, more so though, in your book fiction. Yes, I have read some books in time, more explored in, say, book fiction than it is in film, because again, Americans don't like a mirror in their face. For true. One. Okay.
That's what makes this movie challenging, tricky, and testy is, like, you're right. This is Hal Brown versus, like you said, the weeds of Vietnam and the sand of Afghanistan and the mud of the trenches in World War One. I know what you mean.
And while I know it's coming out now and we're comparing it to points now, but I look at this story and I go, what if this story came out, say, 8 years ago or 9 years ago? Now suddenly it's not Trumpisms. It's about a president trying to bend the Constitution, taking a third term, which has started the coup and which started the California and Texas thing, which is what they implied. And it doesn't hit home. Now, I'm not taking away from it, and I understand why they're releasing it now. And I understand all
this
of that.
This is post January 6th for sure.
Right.
Know?
But
January
at the same,
doesn't happen. This movie doesn't get greenlit. It's right. Too concept, you know.
But what I'm saying is, if you take the same story and set it 8-9 years prior to now,
yeah,
I don't think it's quite as much of a, they want to see,
yeah, like post Trump, Obama,
they want to see mega, you know. I think, yeah, if you said it now, not saying, again, I understand all the parts, I'm just, that's mm-hmm. part of it is what I'm looking at that with this film as well, is that I'm, as much as it does get political and there are some cues and such, you know, I didn't take it as quite apolitical as what they are even saying, but at the same time, I kind of compartmentalized into this reality, yeah, and looked at it going, okay, if you are doing this, if you're not trying to say Republican or Democrats, let's just say it right now, you know, if you're not saying the two-party system in the U.S. is what you're trying to take a side to, then it's an interesting exploration into what if a dictator took over the U.S. And it's a war picture in the U.S. And and when you get into that, politics in America at itself is, lack of a better term, a quagmire. So it's
true,
you know, it's really and it's really hard to separate ourselves from, because we've had such a dramatic 8 years of crap. Yeah. That it's hard not to, and I'm not saying that hasn't influenced the story, but at the same time, this similar story as far as the situation has been explored before, but I think it's hitting more nerves now and hitting more points now, just because we realize there's actually been people who have at least considered and voiced publicly, considered even in joking or in off comments, you know, it's like the meme way back when Bush was in office. You know, a dictatorship is horrible. Well, at least unless I was the dictator, you know, he says on the hot mic, and that quote was out there forever. Yeah. You know, what I say. So, I mean, the concept is there, and you're right. Maybe they should have actually put in a little more. But at the same time, I think especially with the Jesse character, what they were Jesse, what I think they were trying to show is how her journey of how it hardens her. So while I get what you're saying about, you know, if this is an apathetic film, It's a big word for me. I used it up for the month now, so now I'm not going to be able to use any big words because I hang with people who use big words.
13
the
days.
The month is you can halfway over.
I've almost got it for another. But if
you know, the calendar, then you have to speak out of before.
I think part of it is an apathetic film. It's just that you have how the not corruption. I don't want to say corruption necessarily, but
I like that word though. Like. You could create flesh or define in a movie like this, I'll put air quotes, corruption without saying Republican, saying Democrat. And I'm going to do the Mark Rylance stuff again. It would help a little more of the, why are we pushing back for? Because even last night, I'll give credit to the podcast that's not even out yet. Jeff Works asked this question last night. It's like, if we really want to try and true love and be inspired or even just be captivated by these journalists who are going out there, tip of the spear, really trying to make this happen and document these things that need to be reported. If we are in a country collapse, who are they reporting to? If we have bad internet, we can't publish anything. There's not really newspapers going out. And if they are they controlled by the man? Like is this all for naught? And if that's even the case, this is getting more apathetic and nihilistic in a hurry. And, because I'm not saying you need the groundswell of, like, again, the troopers of Illinois coming over the hill to be like, you know, the Knights of Rohan to save the Helm's Deep scene. And, you know, like, I don't need Florida to show up and save the day at the end of the second movie. But it would help, you know, or just more. No, even if the bridge come by. Or, again, or we fuck with it and we have Red Dawn happen at the end. I don't know, man. Like,
Here's an interesting idea. This would turn the movie into more of a Twilight Zone. But
that's
imagine if we
wonder with.
What I'm thinking is, like, with these four journalists, what if, to your point, Don, we get to the end of the movie and find out that they were never writing stories for anybody to report or file? They were just kind of going through the motions because that's all that they knew to do. Ooh, like they get to their destination or they pull up and, like, and Jesse's like, so, you know, when are we going to upload this story? And they're like, There's nowhere to upload it to.
Yeah.
You're almost like a Planet of the Apes thing or something. You blew it all up. I don't know.
Wouldn't that be? And then what I'm saying is, wouldn't that be something compared to the big trophy, the deer picture? You know, we caught the elephant. I don't know.
They don't spell it out. It is implied though that the journalism is grasping at straws with the one scene where they're all together and they're trying and they do drop the line. I think it.
Even in the hotel at the beginning, that it seems a little.
I fully understand you guys saying, you know, it is probably more subtle to its detriment. It really needs don't need your handheld, but you could help handle it. But that's the way I took it. But maybe that's just the type of film that I, you know, for me, my brain with my overactive imagination, which I've been accused of many, many times, I was filling in a lot of the blanks. Mm-hmm. And further looking at this, I'm like. And we've said this with a couple other films in the past, I would say 6 months. It really makes me wonder how many of these films were first concepts for series, but they couldn't get a green light for a series.
Yeah.
And instead, because I'm looking at this similar to maybe a Jericho situation, which I loved Jericho.
Even
I was
like
very
Man in the
sad.
High Castle. Like you can kind of go there too, you know, like you can lengthen this and then tie all the strings.
There's enough in here to where, because Alex Garland is tapping into his zombie back roots for this film in that's how he's handling this of sorts. The scariest thing in zombie films, I'm a huge B horror fan. Okay. Everybody knows that I watch a lot of stuff that no one would probably ever go, oh, let's watch this. But the thing with the zombie movies, 90% of them, not all of them, but 90% of them, the scariest thing is not the zombies. Okay.
I agree.
The zombies may be the catalyst. The scariest thing is how crappy humans end up being to each other.
And that's going on here. Like you know, said with Jesse Plemons, the car wash guys, like that's here. Yeah. That's here.
And that's what you're seeing here. And that's what he's tapping into. So I guess for me, my mind was almost putting this kind of almost in a zombie film of sorts. I would love to see it expanded and episodic. We mentioned how it's episodic. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm just finishing my thought. You could see it play out to where they meet different situations as they go along and then do the overarching story of, say, Lee is keeping it from Jesse, that there's actually no news to report, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, you bring up a good point, Mark, because Alex Garland, he wrote, what, 28 days later,
yeah.
correct? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then, so that came out like, what, 20 years ago or so?
At this point, yeah.
Yeah, and then we have also had The Walking Dead as a successful comic mm-hmm. book and then TV series that ran for over a decade. I think one of the problems is I kept checking back to, like, in my mind thinking, this is all very familiar territory mm-hmm. because there, even though there isn't the dead walking around, you're still coming up to towns.
Right.
Right. You know, people, fortified towns, people mm-hmm. of different factions, lots of weapons, scarce food, all that stuff. We've seen it, and I feel like this is not... you know, just in terms of the world building, mm-hmm. this isn't even close to something like the first season of this Walking Dead.
This is Waterworld. We don't know. I mean, we don't know how Dennis Hopper got there to mess with everybody and steal all the oil and have all the resources and be as cockamamie as he is. But we know there's, I don't know, atolls and weirdo people trying to figure out their way around the world, you know, and that's a terrible comp with this and Waterworld, but
I was gonna say this is a lot better than Waterworld.
Yeah, I like Waterworld. No,
I did Dishes, and those were better than
that's right.
A lot of my enjoyment with Waterworld, I enjoyed Dishes more. But
a next place I compare, maybe smaller movie, but to me a harder movie. And it's not a Civil War thing, but it is a neighbors in your backyard thing. Or what would it look like if it was put on our hallowed ground of American soil? I go to 1999. And I go to Arlington Road, and that movie. Mm-hmm. is 800 times more bone chilling than anything in this movie. Like Jesse Plemons.
I don't know if I saw that.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah. Was that was Tim Robbins in that?
Yeah, that was the Tim Robbins film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where like
okay, I saw it once. Yeah.
But that's post Oklahoma City, pre 9/11. But it goes to the is your terrorist your next door neighbor, and right. And it goes there. It's not nothing's tied in a bow. Nothing's nicely wrapped. You know, it's kind of that 90s thing where even 99 had that, like, it's kind of a bad guy wins. And that's ballsy. And even and I'm not saying this movie had to go bad guy wins, but like, you know, I think bad guy, you needed. I know you lose Kirsten Dunst and you get some journalist shot by Jesse Plemons. But like, and you lose Steve. And I know you lose Steven Henderson and all that. But like, is there a bigger. I mean, I don't know. I need a bigger loss. I need a bigger. I'm not saying the bugs need to blow up Buenos Aires and Starship Troopers, but I need something, you know.
No, but at the same time, I took that final shot that slowly gets developed over the credits, similar to what they try to pull. I don't think maybe it's done maybe as effectively, but I know what he's trying to go for is similar to a few of the shots we've seen from, we all grew up in the 80s, Vietnam films were big when Platoon came around, and that you did have that to where guys were smiling over the dead bodies of their victim. And that's where they were going for is that. And it's the question it's trying to pose at the end is,
are we any better?
You know, even though the president in this world was trying to pull shit. Okay, I mean, you know, and that's what sparked things. At the same time, the way these folks went about things, that's why you have the still at the end, was that actually right? I don't think it's, oh, hey, a good guy wins. I think we let the real world sink in and go, because of the similar parallels, which are there, you could say, oh, they're saying the good guy. But at the same
But the thing is, Mark,
like that didn't elicit cheers in the movie, you know. And
but here's the thing, when they make deliberate choices about the type, the actor they cast, the presentation of that character, you can't just say, oh, but we let our real world stuff filter and project onto the movie because that's the filmmaker tapping into something that we're hoping to make that connection. Now, I think if they wanted
Nick Offerman's brain in an interview in a junket somewhere, like, hey, Nick. Wink, wink. What are you going for there? You
know right. But there. And like, here's the thing. Like,
so yeah.
What if instead of Nick Offerman, they'd gotten, I don't know who I could compare to, but someone who looked like Joe Biden. And at the end, they drag Joe Biden out and she's like, oh, please don't kill me. And it's like, you know, that's, I got the quote. And they blew his brains out. Would people be going, you know, oh, this movie is so apolitical? What are you complaining about? Yeah.
And I went to the press screening that had public people too, but like the weirdest laugh during the movie theater was, wait, can I get a quote? And that actually, in a tense moment of the climax of your movie where you should be on edge, we're all like, come on, you know, like that brought out the that momentary jeers where like we came all this way just to stop and do that. And it just, it, I mean, I'm not the kind of person where it takes me out of the movie, but like I can, I noticed it took plenty of people out of the movie. Weird moment.
What I was hoping for, and I was disappointed in that moment too, because I knew exactly what was going to come next.
Oh, yeah.
Was hoping that because this guy's a journalist and we don't have any context for how he really feels about the president, except that he's a guy who has overstayed his, you know, welcome at the White House and a war has broken out. We don't have any context for why he stayed.
No.
If it's apolitical, it's entirely possible he's a Democrat who decided to stay in office.
True.
You know, without giving any context and understanding why. I mean, yeah, a bunch of his friends got killed on this journey, but it's not like the president was standing there pulling the trigger, right?
I know.
So to have him just say, you know, that's all he needed. I was hoping that they would get in there and Joel would say, look, we came here to get a story. You're going to kill him anyway. I want to get my interview. And they have a sit down with the president. It could be 5 minutes. It could be 10 minutes. But imagine like a one-on-one, like
tough,
not
tough
necessarily.
And I thought that's where they were going to go. And I thought that's where they were going to go because he stops him from killing him. And I'm like, oh, we're going to get a, now we're going to get the quiet moment of the stick him in a chair, tied to a chair.
Come up and, right.
Come up and, you know,
that's a hard place to also take your foot off the accelerator in your Zero Dark 30 ending of a movie in the White House, you know,
not with a well-written script. Okay. Zero Dark 30 allegedly based on true events.
Yeah.
This, they could go anywhere they want with it. And if at the end, perhaps Joel sits down with the president, a person that he has grown to hate, even though we don't know what side he's on, allegedly, they have a conversation and he doesn't at the end, much like the civil discourse in America, at the end, they realize they don't agree with each other. They don't see eye to eye. The president could fully explain himself and Joel could be like, this is bullshit. But I still don't, I don't think
we
should have a bullet.
We heard it. Yeah.
Right. But I don't think they should put a, I don't want to kill you anymore. I just think you're insane or whatever.
Yeah.
And then one of the guards persons, then they take the shot and they kill the president. And Joel is like outraged or something. And it ends on a weird down note.
Right. Because
instead of this like weird upbeat ending.
Yeah, the virtuous American thing typically would be put that man on trial, you know, much unfortunately like the our current president who's got a few criminal accounts or current former president's got a few court cases in his future. You're right. So and you could tell they're going for the non-virtuous ending by doing the Osama bin Laden ending, you know, by killing the motherfucker, you know, and going that hard for it, despite pausing for a laugh and a quote. So, yeah, it's a different movie would have him spill his guts and it would be the, what does it all mean moment for all of us at the last possible moment of the movie where it could be done. We would probably be rolling our eyes. Like, would this really happen? Would we even get all this? It'd be like an opposite of orgy of evidence, but like, it'd be a tough place to take your foot off the accelerator. I get it though. I want it, you know, but. Ah.
And that's where I was like, that's why I said is I didn't mind the ending. Yeah. It didn't ruin my whole overall experience with the film. I get what they were going for.
Yeah. It's just
me personally
with what they were chopping up,
you know,
too. Yeah.
And I think sometimes we run into that to where it sometimes overshadows the actual film. I'm not saying it is here and I'm not speaking for anyone but just myself, where sometimes it can overshadow maybe how good or bad a film is the way you want it to end. It doesn't exactly end the way you want, the way it might make for a better ending, not necessarily, you know, make sense with the rest of the story you get, but this would be a better ending. But does that mean, and in all honesty, I haven't felt this tense for some of the scenes that you get in this film. And while yes, you don't necessarily get the payoff, there are some highly tension filled scenes in here, the way they're handled. And the biggest thing is the lack of score that you have throughout this film, which surprised me and which was an interesting take to take with this.
Yeah.
Because it puts you in a little bit different level of, you know, having the gnat sound like that first, I'll tell you, that first scene when they drive up to that first gas station, I'm like, okay, I'm actually tense, you know, in spite of myself. I'm like, the minute they start to drive up and the one guy gets up, I'm like, well, shit, I'm tense. Why am I tense right now? Because there's no buildup of score or anything. It's just them pulling
or
up
a score coloring
gas station, or yeah,
or a score coloring the moment to be like, we're gonna put the nervous yeah. music on right now, or we're gonna put the Dooley Dooley Road music on right now.
Right.
And we have this very striking soundtrack of like. It's super duper needle drop choices of like that are just like mood moments, exhales, transitions, establishing shots. Like, it's an interesting soundtrack. With a lot of B-sides, a lot of different takes of music where it's not like James Gunn showed up and said, let me bring my 70s hits, you know.
Or let's crank out the
guy for the 45th time in a movie. You're like,
let's crank out the CCR because we're doing a war picture with helicopters. So we need CCR because when you have the helicopter shot of helicopters over a war zone, you got to have CCR.
I know. So I like the bold soundtrack choices to put a little mood in here. And without it, you would expect the score to do the same. So like. It's going for a cool intention mood. And that's something I will easily tip my hat to. And with you, Mark, I'm right with you. Like, better and fitting are two different words when it comes to endings. And that's the tricky thing to do, where I'm pretty sure you ask Alex Garland, he's like, I picked the fitting ending for what I was going for. Better's in the eye of the audience. And that's where we're all with our own asses and opinions. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is I can't say I was let down. I was deflated because I'm like, there is a way to do this particular ending, but this isn't quite it. You needed more substance, more meat, because we're establishing throughout the entire film. This is the lesson Jesse is learning about being a hardcore journalist whose job it is to get the photo, to get the story, to talk to all different kinds of people, and then to get to the truth. Mm-hmm. And at the end, Joel, apropos of absolutely nothing except that he's lost people, but he's been losing people for years. We come to understand. It's like he just does it. It's a total screenplay moment meant to, I would imagine, elicit cheers among at least part of the audience. But you know, the reaction that I experienced, and it sounds like the reaction you experienced, Don, was kind of like, it just, because he wasn't allegedly taking a side. If it had been more of a direct, you know, bit of political theater, I think you would have gotten more of a reaction instead of everyone I left with were like, what the fuck was that?
for the amount of slight risk, I'm not going to say full risk, but for the slight risk and the dangerous eggshells you're walking on for most of this film to try to keep it to where you're following neutral press, regardless of what side is going on, they take the easy ending. versus the more complicated, polarizing.
Yeah. Well, Ian, you can almost say the ending does the same thing you've been saying along the way, like a few moments later. Like, we have so many of those a few moments later scenes. Like, we have the in-film ending of the president getting shot and the walk away. And then our credits is the developed picture of a few moments later. We're doing the big deer picture. So when you do that a few moments later and you make those jumps, you make those transitions, there is no time for ramifications. Mm-hmm. And at some point, when you're doing a topic and a premise this bold and this big, free or unaccommodating of ramifications, you lose a little bit. You need a little bit of that. I'm not saying coda. But you need ramifications.
What I would do with this, if you want your ramifications, is not show the stills that Jesse took. You know how we took a break and we saw what stills that she took from her film.
Yeah.
At the very end, instead of developing the one shot, you have the stills that she's taken throughout her journey, which were far more dramatic.
Like a got slideshow.
The soldiers getting do a slideshow of those photos, and then when you get to the end credits, then you can still have your big kill photo,
You hold that one for last, like a Marvel after credit scene,
right?
Especially if you don't show the shooting. If you get to the Oval Office and the president's cornered and you credits it, you know,
you
and
get then, to the don't kill me, and then you fade to black.
Yeah, and then as the credits roll and you're seeing Kaylee's pictures, and the last one is the big game picture. That's a holy shit moment that you could have had. but you you spend it. It still affects you when it's the first image you see in the credits. But imagine if it's the last.
But man, yeah, could you imagine? Because then you're seeing the photo slideshow of how Jesse
how it gets worse.
Went further and further and took more bold shots and more.
Yep. And like you said, her craft, her growth as a photographer, because chances are the second to last one you watch is Kirsten Dunst getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, holy shit. And not that that had to be the ambiguous one you leave for the mystery, but you leave the president one as the parting shot in your for people who stay through the credits. Because imagine if you got up and left and you probably went like, oh, if you got up and left disappointed that you didn't see an ending, like a mumblecore film. Which just has the opening. I hate mumblecore films and their open endings. But if you don't, if you open it just to make you wait for 6 minutes of credits and then you hit them in the head with the big game shot. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a strong writer, like you said. I don't know. That's also what I'm thinking.
Well, that's the thing is I there are other movies that we've kind of talked about tonight that I think go that extra mile in terms of fleshing out the world, the characters, the politics. I told my wife, I'm like, this movie was one edit and one script draft away from being extraordinary.
I agree.
There are parts of it that are extraordinary, but it just doesn't quite hold together for me. And that's, I'm kind of disappointed. I mean, I look at something like Ex Machina, you know, the movie that really put Garland on the map as a filmmaker, as a director and also a writer. Like, that's such a tight, you know, drama that has been thought through. And maybe it's because he's only dealing essentially with three people, you know, really in a lab. Yeah. Right, that he can really take his time to figure out the characters and what I'll call the politics, or at least the social dynamics. Whereas here, it might just have been a bit too big. Maybe he needed to bring in someone else to bounce things off of or tighten stuff up. I'm not sure.
That's fair.
And
you know me, I'm the Ex Machina guy where you do all that heady stuff that you want to revisit, you want to dig into, you want to learn more about, like, how did Oscar Isaac get here? How are these robots doing what they're doing? Where's our female robot's head at this whole movie? And they examine that so closely and well. And you heard me on your show, like, but we do all that just to fight over a knife on the floor like a goddamn soap opera. Like, even he can't land the plane in that one, in my opinion, where you're still landing the plane rough here too. So,
yeah,
but I'm a jerk and I'm the one guy who thinks that about that movie. So
no, but I take your criticism of it, even though I don't particularly share it on that movie. I think the more I think about Alex Garland, the more I think he's kind of like his movies are kind of like Stephen King movies. A lot of them, they just he can't figure out how to end his damn things.
Annihilation is a weird ending. You know,
I love Annihilation.
I think that's Icarus Too Close to the Sun, where kind of like this, like that's too big from two or two, too heady of concepts that also are horrendously underexplained. Where if you're going to go that weird, we need a little more. Like this, like you said, Mark, this is weirdly enough, simplistic enough. It's Civil War in America, where if you want to fill in your own blanks and put it in your head, you can. Like, this isn't the gulf of, like, I don't get the weird sci-fi stuff. Like, you can get to the boomers with this one versus where, like, I don't get it. You're like, you can really walk away from that movie completely flustered. This one, anyone can plug into this and take away what they will, good, bad, indifferent, or otherwise. And there's appeal there, even if it's one edit and another thing short.
Yeah. Well, I think that the last thing I'll say about the politics of this movie is it's weird because without an aftermath of the consequences of it, I'm just having a hard time thinking, like, let's just assume this has some kind of a real world parallel. If there is a civil war, the people who are in these militia or even on the side of like the president, let's say it's a Trump militia or whatever, because that's kind of the allegory we're going for in the movie. Yeah. They're not going to stop or surrender or give a shit if you kill the president.
No, they will not.
Fictitiously in a movie. I'm just saying that because we're on a live stream. But I'm saying, like, the war is going to go on. I mean, it's a fantasy saying, oh, my God, Washington's fallen. People are going to be like, in West Virginia, like, who the fuck cares about Washington? Yeah. They say that shit today.
I know.
There is a slight line drop.
He's thinking it goes harder, you know, like, or you're missing an edge.
Yeah, there is a slight line drop, I think, in here where someone does ask that question. And we don't really get an answer and nobody really answers it. But it is a question of I think it's either on a news program or someone mentions it, though, that's saying, OK, so what happens if they do kill the president? You know, it's like, OK, you know, and there's that question of, OK, so our California and Texas still going to be buddy buddy now that California and Texas have done this also and cut a swath through the U.S. Is the rest of the U.S. going to put up with California and Texas? You know,
and what happens?
The shot.
Like, who's the carpetbagger that takes that fill that 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 fills in America's place? Like, lifts us back up for their own gain when we're all in pieces. Like, is it the Chicagoans that set this out, or is it again? Are you divvying up between the Cowboys and the Surfers? Where's Florida at? Like,
given the mandate for, you know, what happens to the president at the end, because it's not like the soldiers just decide, like, we're going to do this. We understand before they go in there what the order is. What's it going to look like? I don't see journalists
getting that chance to be on the breach and clear team. Like, there's no way they're on that tip of the spear. Like, they're three parties behind. There's
But my point is, like, given that that's the order for the head of this party or this faction, what's that order look like when you get down to, you know, all the way down the chain? Are they going to be prisoners of war, or is it just going to be, to use another Alex Garland movie, annihilation?
Well, I mean, that's the thing I'm thinking about with ramifications. Like, if you really want to sit back and go, holy shit, we just Zero Dark 30 the White House, and we shot the fucking president on the Oval Office floor. How
in
does
this,
that
in not... this fictitious movie?
I know. Sorry. Yeah, please. Don't just... someone park. But like, how does that not rattle? 350 million cages. I have no clue how the movie go where this movie goes, because I can't even call this balls. Like, I'm sitting here poking the holes, so I'm poking this whole time. But like, if you're gonna go there and show no ramifications, even imply no ramifications of the developed photo, you're missing something, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm just happy that we're all friends here, an hour and a half into the show. But
we survived our pod last night too. Well, Katie and Jeff and I, we're cool. We're all right. You know,
Well, that's good. So we did get one comment way earlier in the show.
Yes.
Wilt says, oh no, it's me. I was like, we're just going along. Yeah. But the Terminator series has the dystopedia future feeling to it, also because in the future setting, these machines run by the computer Skynet have declared war on humanity. Yeah, I mean, that's another
That's back to Children of Men, who have like larger civilization problem than just a crooked president. Like that, right? That's bigger. Yeah.
Right, but I think that it those movies, it is an extreme version, but it also shows that in those kind of extreme situations, like you're talking about with an American Civil War that's been going on for, we assume, a few years, it's going to look a lot different. I mean, Mark, you mentioned earlier in the show that there are some places like Colorado and Utah or whatever that are sparsely populated, so there could be people who ignore it. They're sparsely populated now. What happens when you have the major cities? We've got refugees coming into America from war-torn places, you know, all over the globe. Mm-hmm. Imagine American refugees going from, like, we're getting out of Chicago, we're going to go to a place where they have a lot more space. That might cause its own tensions, I'm sure.
That's what I'm saying with the federal teat. Like, we're barely hanging on as an economy as it is. You take away federal money or control, or you lock that down in a tyrannical way, no one's sitting this out. If we're this far and we're putting walls around the White House, no one's sitting this out, because we all need the unity of a country or whatever you want to call it to get back to the norm, you know? Oh gosh, come on. Like, post-COVID, and I see this in my profession as a teacher, all everyone wanted was take my kids back to school and make it normal again. Once you go that far that the premise is asking for, there's no go back normal again, where it's, you can't. No one sits that out. No one sits that out.
There's psychic damage. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Mark.
I just didn't take their parents sitting out as a representation of the rest of the area.
The only thing is, I didn't take it as that. Like, we've seen this in World War II movies, where not every village in France is armed to the teeth with torches and pitchforks out to get you. There are little footholds of people who are just trying to hole up in their home and get through it. We know that. Yeah.
And with this one, you could have used a series. I mean, you guys are all absolutely right. But I've seen a few of these films again that I wish kind of were limited series, because I like the seeds that are planted for the world you're in. And you're like, man, there's a lot of places you could go in this sandbox, and we don't get that because you only have so much runtime unless you're going to make, you know, I'd rather see that than a 3-hour Scorsese film.
Thank you, sir. Totally agree.
You know,
speaking of which, stay tuned for Sinatra.
Leo, I don't see the fit.
Marty, there are other actors in Hollywood. That's all I'm saying.
I can sing.
Thank you. Fine. You can't voice over that movie. Or if you're going to do the Priscilla version where you never show Frank singing and it's the, you know, the behind the scenes man and you never get on stage and you never show his music. If you do that and it's Leo, okay. But like, Priscilla's kind of boring when you don't have Elvis sing. So
like, get Bublier, yeah. Okay? I don't like I don't like Michael Bublier, but he's the one that's probably closest out there that sounds like Sinatra because he's trying so hard to sound like Sinatra.
I just need a guy who can smile, and Leo can't. So
he smiled a lot in Killers of the Flower Moon. He had those great teeth.
But
money, sir. Sorry.
But this could be, I mean, 20 years ago, this is Hugh Jackman. 5 years ago, this is Zac Efron. Maybe even now.
Today, it's
a serious actor who could do that. And he, I'm a James Marsden guy. Someone's going to say Tom Holland. I'm going to laugh him out the door.
It's Timothy Chalamet. It's Timothy Chalamet.
Doing Walker
Austin
voice?
Butler?
Get him out of here. You need to shake that fake southern accent out of the Californian and see if he goes back to not placating for his parts again. But yeah, good luck with that. You get an unknown. If you're Marty and you're the curator and you care, go find somebody from American Idol. Like 20 years ago, this is Harry Connick Jr. You know, so
especially if we're talking young Sinatra. I mean, you could put young Harry Connick Jr. and young Sinatra the mugshot together and no difference. All right. Well, we're
evolving.
Are,
yeah.
Yeah. No, we are evolving, but we're going off in a different direction. Yeah. So I'm going to cut it short. This has been the Civil War live stream 2024. Thank you both so much. Don Shanahan of Film Obsessive and Every Movie Has a Lesson and the Cinephile Hissy Fit podcast, which isn't going to come out for a little while. But when it does, you can come back to this stream and listen to it. So I'm going to put a link down below. And then, yeah, of course. And then Mark the Movie Man Krawcheck of the Spoiler Room and Special Mark Productions representing press tonight. I love that. Thank you so much. And yeah, guys, this has been a really fun conversation. I wasn't sure how it was going to go, and I'm glad we're all still friends. But excuse me while I burp. Man, that was gross. Just in terms of etiquette, surely I've got problems. Anyway, folks out there, if you like this live stream, please like and subscribe. Ring the bell for notifications. Support all of Earth's Mightiest Critics. All their information is down below. Don, ring that bell again because I was talking.
Okay.
There you go. I could hear at that time. Join us back next week because I think if it all works out, we're going to be back here next Wednesday talking about a little vampire girl in a weird house siege movie called Abigail. I'm looking forward to this one. Okay. Don, I know we're going to miss you on that one because you're not a horror guy, right?
The press screening would have been tonight. My window to see it would have been tonight, but I'm happy. I'd rather be here than there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Come hang out. We'll see if Abigail is better than Civil War. Who knows? I don't know. But until next time, whenever that is, whatever that is, thanks, take care. And in the words of The Judge, that old TV show, try and be good to each other. Maybe it was Doug Llewellyn for People's Court. I don't remember. But love one another. Go in peace. And whatever. I'm going to end this live stream now.
Don't forget your receipts.
The receipts? What? Wait, what receipts? I'm hovering over the end
stream
button.
People's court. If you didn't have your receipts, Judge Wapner would be like, nope, sorry. You know, that man passed judgment. The best court in all of US was Judge Wapner. That guy could get in there.
Boom. Am I the only one who noticed, besides my dad, who pointed out to me that Doug Llewellyn had no lips?
Oh yeah. No, he had no lips. Yeah. He
son of a gun.
Yeah. Like slits. All right. Good night, everybody.